In honor of, didn't we talk last week or the week before last about some Dead reunion?
A few weeks ago.
A few weeks ago.
Well,
so
they're having Trey, or is it Trey Anastasio?
Anastasio, yeah. In honor of that, this opening segment will be 47 minutes long.
Oh, good times.
And uninterrupted, so everybody be quiet. And I'm just going to pontificate.
You're doing a solo the whole time?
Yeah, I got a solo podcast.
It's going to be a rant by yourself about something.
And somewhere in the middle.
Filibuster the show.
So somewhere in the middle, everyone will go, is this going anywhere? I don't think it's going anywhere. So, just kidding. Good to be here. Welcome, everyone.
We have a guest today. It's a fly.
I've noticed that.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop me from drinking my drink.
No,
he's got a buzz on.
I knew it wouldn't, by the way.
Yeah.
Are you
winging it? It'd take
it?
A lot more than that.
Maybe.
I'm well aware of that.
Maybe it's a French fly.
Wait, do we have two conversations going on at once?
In fact, two conversations going on.
That sounds
going
to be all night.
All right. Yeah, let nobody ever say, like, we don't throw curveballs at you.
It is a little sultry. And not in a sexy way in Mark's garage again tonight.
Yeah, you used sultry last week, too.
I know. Well,
I thought it
was... Well, apparently, sultry means humid to Kevin.
It does. Well, I mean, it just means unquestionably hot.
Always makes me think of Throw Mama from the Train.
Oh, my gosh. What?
What doesn't, you know?
That's true.
Let's start this thing. What's my name? Oh, I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
Hey, and I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it.
So I don't know if it would work. I mean, I kind of feel like with our luck, maybe it wouldn't work. Like, it would just be, we would have some inclement weather at play. But Shane was commenting a moment ago off air that the weather's really nice outside. And it's a little, it's not steamy, but it's a little warm in Mark's garage. And so maybe, you know, one of these days, an alfresco, a topless show, as it were.
It would be.
We could just do it in the nude. I mean,
I'm sure that would delight everyone. Yeah. I know I certainly would be.
None of us would be, like, looking at each other.
Well, just a bunch of, like, kids. Just like
shame-filled garage.
Uncomfortable. I don't know. I might be late that day.
Like, what did you want to talk about today, Ryan?
Well, there's this new band that's getting some attention. They're called Mumford & Sons.
Oh, they are getting just a little bit of attention.
They have gone out of their way to, shall we say, reinvent themselves.
Well, they have, and so...
And you guys were talking about this. I don't actually know this story, so loop me
Oh,
in.
You don't?
No.
You should show him pictures.
I'll pull up, just if you Google Mumford & Sons, you get side-by-side...
comparisons of their
stupid-ass
contrived.
On the right is what we... typically know them as. Then on the left is their new modern reinvention. They no longer look like they stepped out of like a...
Oh, gosh. Like they've become Travis.
Oh, yeah. It does kind of look like they've become
All of
Travis.
The shit that people...
All the vests and suspenders.
The cry
and
about
derby hats are gone.
Stuff from a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's basically what that band... Their look was personified that hipster hate. It's so fucking stupid and contrived. But because of that... It, in my mind, like their new, like, just wearing normal street clothes looks just as fucking contrived.
Well, and their music changed accordingly too. They're like rockers now. You know, it's not like banjos and mandolins. It's like electric guitars.
Electric mandolin.
Sure.
I mean, if you paint yourself into a corner, like,
that look was gonna that. Little period of music and look was going to go out of fashion eventually anyway. I mean,
they didn't pull a Dave Matthews Band or something.
What, sound wise?
You mean like dump their septic tank?
Running your sound into the ground and then reinventing yourself.
I was going to say dumping your bus a septic tank onto a load of tourists.
that's pretty. That's pretty good.
If you ever needed a metaphor for the Dave Matthews Band.
thank you for that. Okay, well, God bless you, Marcus Mumford. You did a good job getting out of your fucking bowler hat and type.
I could just like see the band and management meeting. Like, oh, all right, guys, this thing's going to go away. Can we name all the bands that were part of that sort of like Lumineers.
Lumineers with Edward Sharp and the Magnetic
Zeros
was Monsters and Men, kind of like sound. Yeah. There were another.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
In my mind, it's not defined as much by their sartorial
choices,
but as much as it is that they do lots of shouting the word "Hey."
There was a lot of that going on.
A lot of those going on.
And I think that all that stuff kind of came from, Spoon's label mate, Arcade Fire. I think they kind of started that thing. Well, I know
that
I,
everything was sort of anthemy and...
I don't necessarily think that they're a part of that little movement. I think that little movement, like, saw Arcade Fire, was like, we could do some variation of that. And then Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros had that song Home, which kind of took off, and then everybody just like jumped on.
I feel like Mumford & Sons did more than any of those bands to take that to the masses. You know, I'm glad that you brought this up today because I really, really have been thinking I need to bring up a Mumford & Sons record for a while now, but I don't want to torture myself that way. But now we feel like we've discussed them enough, and they're off my plate for a little while.
Nice.
So thank you.
I'm happy to help.
That was a painless way to get
it's like an
that.
Aperitif, except shitty.
An amuse-bouche of shit. Okay, so we're back on this thing.
.com.
We're back on this thing that we're doing this week where we are revisiting an album by a band that we previously covered on the show.
We're not revisiting an album.
We're revisiting a band. We're different. Yeah. We're revisiting a band. Right. Yeah. Sorry. I misspoke. And it is my week this week. And so earlier in the show, many, many months ago, Brian had picked Slanted and Enchanted, the first album by Pavement, and we were talking about, and this is actually the genesis of me wanting to do this, about how there are so many albums afterward that might have been a better listen than that one. It was so rough. And
I think this one is a better listen, but it's still very much Pavement.
We've got lots of time to talk about this record, so I feel certain we'll get to all of this. But there were a number of things that I thought were particularly interesting about Pavement, having not been a huge Pavement fan during their day, and then genuinely enjoying Slanted and Enchanted. Like, I got a kick out of that record, but they still sat, and then I put it down. I put that band down for a while. And didn't pick them back up until we were going to do this one. And they still sound ramshackle. They still sound like...
But
like
more well-rehearsed.
Songs are so much better on this record. I mean, it's Pavement, and it's weird, and it's angular and some stuff. But, I mean, there are like some genuinely well-crafted songs on this as opposed to most of Slanted and Enchanted. It's definitely not... It's a more confident band.
Well, and I think from everything that I read, they... You know, absolutely strove for that, but they still sound at least a little bit like guys stumbling around in the dark who just happen to
What I noticed particularly about this record and about this band in general is it sounds to me like they try really hard to sound like they don't give a shit.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I think a lot of that goes hand in hand, though, too, with how disaffected Stephen Malcolm is.
He's got that kind of yelpy quality to his voice.
But it's also, let's be honest, like it's also, and we won't go down the rabbit hole on the of its time talk.
It is really of its time.
But it is really of its time. And there was a lot of that, like, I mean, the Sonic Youth record that we covered from that same era was not dissimilar. And, you know, like there was a certain cachet in putting out there that you didn't give a fuck. And there's still some of that sells.
Well, that's partially why I liked this record a lot. And
I did too.
It sounds, I think some of the, especially the first six, seven songs are, like there's some songs in there that are surprising how well-crafted they were. If you don't buy into the whole Pavement thing, if it's not, you know, Stephen Malcolmus and then like the weird, you say ramshackle. The drummer that they had on Slanted and Enchanted is nowhere near as good as the drummer that's on this record. The rhythm section is really in lockstep.
Right. You recall the drummer they had on Slanted and Enchanted, he just happened to have recording equipment in his basement.
They call him like a fat old hippie or something?
Yeah, like he was like this, like he was like in his mid-40s and they were in their 20s.
We read somewhere where they were like completely just dissing him, his appearance or everything about him, I don't know.
Yeah, so I listened to this a couple times through, like, in the car, and then one time through while setting up the restaurant. And I will say that you know, the last time I listened to it, like in the car, it had grown on me a little bit more. But I there's a thing with Pavement that I also get with like Modest Mouse, and I get with Mac DeMarco. I don't know if you guys know him, but it's like this. They sound flat all the time. It's I don't know if it's downtuned guitar. You're a guitar player, so is Mark. And I'm not sure what they do to achieve that, but it's a dissonant sound that like bothers me.
I think I know what you're talking about. I don't know if
it
that...
sounds like their instruments are out of tune.
Yeah,
like,
no,
on purpose.
No, well, it doesn't really sound out of. I don't know. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Like, bear, like instead yeah. of instead of like right on the note. Like,
how's that?
I think that's that's pretty good. I think that's more an effect of how they're playing. That's good. You know what? You should apply for Mumford and Sons. They need a new mouth guitar slide player for their new incarnation. Okay,
right on that. I can do that in Air Theremin.
we heard the sound we're looking for, boss.
Let's buy a million of them.
Hey, let's listen to one of these songs. I mean, we might as well.
Well,
just...
do you want to do one of the singles?
Yeah, I think we should start it with Stereo. I mean, since it's the first song, it was a single.
Turn it up. Turn it up.
Okay.
The indie rock compilation.
Yes, exactly. Is that freedom?
Now this is indie music. Okay. Yeah.
Is that indie rock?
Turn it up, dude.
Pigs, they tend to wiggle when they walk. The infrastructure rots, and the owners hate the jocks with their agents and their dates. If the signature's a check,
you'll just have to wait.
And we're counting up the instants that we save. Tired nations so depraved, from the cheap seats see us wave to the camera. It took a giant ramrod to raise the demon settlement. But hi-ho, silver ride. Hi-ho, silver ride. I wonder if he speaks like an ordinary guy.
I know him, and he does.
And you're my fact-checking cub.
A little bit of Stereo. And fellas, do we know how Geddy Lee's voice got so high? And if, in fact, it is that high? Would he just talk like an ordinary guy?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he does talk like an ordinary guy.
Somebody who knows him.
That's actually a thing that Pavement does that I can't name another band that does. They talk about other artists in their work.
They do
a lot.
Yeah.
There's, what is it, Range Life on Crooked Rain, where they call out like Stone Temple Pilots and Smashing Pumpkins. And
Range Life, that's a good fucking song.
I love that song, but they do kind of sound like dicks in it. Yeah. I mean,
look, I get the feeling that
they just have a real snotty attitude.
Well, they're toward each other too. There's a lot of acrimony with it when they got back together, when they split up and when they got back together. Like,
yeah,
they couldn't even put aside their differences for like one
show.
Well,
and then, remember that do you guys remember that No Alternative compilation that was out in the 90s?
We're just talking about that. It's like, now that's what I call indie rock.
No, that's, well, there was, but this was for like for a cause or something, and a bunch of like sort of the elite bands or whatever.
It was like,
but
Pavement
had a song on there, but it was about REM. It was called "The Unseen Something of a Picket Fence, the Unknown Wisdom." Anyway, something about a picket, the unseen power, unknown power of a picket fence. Anyway, it's all about REM. And then like Michael Stipe said something nice about it, and then like in an interview, like Malcolm said something shitty about it. Like, oh, they thought it was a compliment. I'm like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
It's just... The Unseen Power of the Picket Fence, I think it's what it's called. Okay. But anyway.
Let that go, okay?
Yeah. Anyway, like just shut up.
Yeah.
Just fucking be nice for a minute.
I don't get the feeling that there's a lot of niceness being spread around.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting about this record was that they weren't in the habit of, and maybe this goes back to the acrimony thing, but they weren't in the habit of recording in the same room. Like, They actually recorded, they recorded in more in person on this record than it sounded like they had done on some of their previous work.
Mm, interesting.
That is, well,
I mean, you see that a lot with
overdubs. In my limited experience with recording and being around recording sessions, that actually happens more than you might think.
Well, and I don't mean like necessarily like everybody's in the same building. It was like they were like the way that it was presented was like these guys lived in different cities.
Oh, really?
And so it sounded like they were doing some of their tracking in other cities. Now that may not be true, but that's the way. That's absolutely the way that it read. So.
Yeah, they definitely sound like it would be more of a live recording thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, how would you?
There's a lot of interplay.
Yeah, and especially because it's like so intentionally sloppy. Like, how would you? I mean, that's it's a lot to exact in Into Darkness.
Well, I don't think it's as sloppy as at first blush you might think, and certainly not as sloppy as.
Well, granted,
I'm sure it's stylistic. But I think the like sort of down tuning of the guitars or whatever, and just the way Malkmus delivers his vocals, makes it sound a little more sloppy than you might think. Like,
yeah,
his vocals definitely. I mean, it sounds like he worked on them. You know, they're intelligent, but they sound like first takes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that'll work.
Well, and I think they are. Well, yeah. the tracks are, many of them are first takes.
There's a lot. Do you know that?
I read that as well.
You got something to read?
Goddamn right, dude. I got shit to read. Tell you what, man. Here's what I'm going to do.
Are you my fact-checking cuz?
I am not your fact-checking cuz.
That is my favorite.
Actually,
line
I will
from that
say
last
I will
song.
Say this. So this is one thing like so I read a couple of things and one that I was particularly drawn to. One thing that I remember from our first from Slanted and Enchanted when we did that one was you remember that I printed out that shitty like yellow paper and everything was like it was
Pitchfork.
Yeah. And it was super over the top, but it was like somebody had just scribbled in their
It was supposed to look like they were just scribbling in their legal pad.
It was a super slack review of a slack band and whatever, and lots of shit was scribbled out, and anyway it was
that's another eye roll moment.
It was an eye roll moment. But it occurred to me when I was reading one of the reviews that I was drawn to that this is a band, and probably because of the way that they jack around, like this is a band that encourages that from reviewers more than some bands do. They don't take themselves so seriously.
Yeah, they leave themselves a pretty big target since they're wise asses to begin with.
Yeah, so in the Consequence of Sound review, the guy who wrote this review wrote himself, like essentially his name was Jeremy, wrote younger Jeremy a note about this review or about this record, and essentially based like he didn't pick it up, like he didn't get into it when it actually happened, and then now he reviews records and whatever, and so anyway they went back and revisited this album and he wrote himself a letter from 20 years ago or whatever, I presumably when this got reissued, and I'm in true Andy Kaufman fashion, we're now going to read all of it, so if you all settle in. just kidding. No, there's just one little bit here that I thought was pretty interesting. But I wanted to share the larger moment of the fact that everybody jumps through all these hoops when they're reviewing Pavement, which is funny.
Sound creative.
Yeah. So anyway, he said, and I'll just take this out of context, but I think in general, we end up talking about this kind of stuff a lot. And he says, there's a magic to the moment when you finally love a band, and anyone who says he or she was with every band from the beginning is a lying sack of shit. We all miss/avoid trends. We all get on the wrong paths. You will have countless wrong paths. And in 2010, which I guess when this review was written, many of us, including myself, are becoming slaves to the revisionist history being written by the Zeitgeist Molders and the Hegemonic Media, which are two great band names, so much so that when they tell you what to listen to, you co-opt that belief as if it was truly your own. So essentially, it's an ode to revisionist history, but kind of him, the older him, telling the younger him, hey, it's okay that you missed this because it still sounds cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That was a little meta, too.
It was a little meta. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that you point out, like, yeah, that people kind of, it seems like they've bent over backwards a little bit. Because for a large segment of society, Pavement was like, I mean, I think because the ramshackle nature, because they were detached, and because like they really defined indie rock in the mid 90s. I mean,
certainly.
Like it's amazing if you go back. We just listened to Stereo, but Stereo and Shady Lane were the two singles. You could hear that on like normal radio stations and stuff, like around that, like when you
a little bit, yeah,
not like a ton. I mean,
yeah,
but
it wasn't tearing down Casey Kasem's top 40.
No, of course not. But it was a much different time then. But I think they really defined that paradigm in no small part because people were emulating them.
What I noticed, the thing that really stuck out to me, and it really stood out to me today as I was driving home, there are two songs on this record that really I felt like I got really excited about more than any of the others. And I got home and looked up the record on Wikipedia, and sure enough, it's the two that are not written by Stephen Malkmus.
I really like
by Scott Canberg.
I like.
You know what? I felt the same way.
That's weird.
They're the two other two songs that sound the least pavement-y.
One of my favorite songs on this record is the first Scott Canberg, and my by a large margin worst least favorite song on this record is the second one that he does.
Oh, not me. But
yeah,
okay.
No, I'm just saying. I think that's interesting that.
And I had no idea that like. I think Canberg sings the second one.
Yeah, he does. I just don't care for that particular song. But the first one, Date with IKEA, I think the three back to back strongest songs are Date with IKEA, Ode to Begin, and Type Sully. I think Type Sully is the best song on this record, personally. It shows a lot of depth. It's slower. It's more introspective.
Stephen Malkmus is a really creative lyricist. It's just that sonically, it doesn't. It's a little off-putting to me.
I get why you would say that. And for me, that's why. Well, the two reasons why this was a more enjoyable listen than Sliding and Enchanted for me. Number one, the rhythm section is so much better and sounds so much better.
It's better produced.
Yeah, it's better.
There are a lot of things that they've tightened up, as
If you go in, I mean, it's chaotic, but it's a planned chaos for sure. And also, just the songs are a lot better written. I mean, they're better. Malkmus has grown, you know, so much as a songwriter in between those two records.
Shane was gesticulating to the garage.
I was. Yes. The grand sweeping gestures. Why don't you want to do? Should we?
Well, at some point, okay, and I'll let you pick if you want to listen to the Canberg compilation or composition that you like or the one that you don't like. But I would like to hear at least one of the two.
That's fine. But first, I want to listen to Type Slowly. Like I was saying, I think that it shows a different side of them. And after the break, we'll pick. Well, I'll flip a coin and we'll do one of those Canberg songs. But for now, I want to listen to Type Slowly.
Sherry smell. Get up early in the bed, the new morning comes so easy. Spells have been cast and the urge has been lost. Snipers posted bills as they should of our midnight. Type slowly.
I think that shows a different side of that band.
There's some growth for sure.
I mean, it's just different. I think the whole record there's growth since the first. There's definitely production growth on this one. I mean, I was most familiar before this with their last record, Terror Twilight and Slanted and Enchanted. This song, I mean, this record somehow passed me by. It got like pretty universally good reviews when it came out, as far as I remember.
Yeah. Actually, I looked it up on ye old Wikipedia, and Chris Gow gave it whatever his fawning adoration is. Here we go. Let's see. Rolling Stones, like 4.5 stars.
Yeah, I mean, it got good. I mean, it's critic bait, for sure.
Pitchfork's 8.7. I don't even know if they were around then. They probably revisited it.
No, I'm sure they revisited
it. And this was...
The coveted Entertainment Weekly A for the indie rock set.
Oh, yes.
I just realized that we're doing two Matador records 2 weeks in a row.
That is true.
And, you know, who basically, just much like how Merge... would have been maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Matador could do no wrong in a critic's eyes in the mid-90s.
Like, oh, no. I mean,
93 and 99.
What's the tagline from that Wes Anderson spoof on SNL? You had me at Wes Anderson.
Yeah,
it was like basically you had me at Matador.
Yeah.
Like in the mid-90s.
I mean, well, granted, a lot of that was deserved.
Well, of course. No, they were releasing all kinds of good stuff. But after a while, it was just like, oh, wait, what else you got coming down the pipeline? We're going to love that, too.
It was sort of like 4AD was right before that. You know, it took on the mantle of the Darling
label.
That is
true. That is true.
Well, I like that song a lot. I like this record a lot in general. But I think one of the reasons why that song stood out to me is because it's sort of like a little babbling brook. In the middle of like,
well, they took a break from their smartassery and, you know, ramshackle.
I don't think it is ramshackle. I get why
there's definitely some.
There, look, ramshackle. If you go back and listen to "Slanted and Enchanted," like we should A B like a song off of that and A B a song off of this, and you will say yes. There's noisiness in this, and there's definitely like he's got sort of a rambling, meandering thing that he does vocally. But
and their style, is loose. Like their style is intentional.
That rhythm section is not a loose rhythm section.
Well, I don't mean like are they on the beat or not? I mean that like they intentionally sound casual. Like
casual is a better word. Yeah. I think yeah. But you know it's
like a studied indifference.
It's interesting. Like
that's I agree.
Okay. I mean yeah. I mean I can buy that. But that's partially why I liked. This because there's so many strong bones of a song in the middle of so many of these songs that when you hang that dressing on top of it, it just makes it more interesting to me. I found this record really, really listenable. In fact, I'm kicking myself that it took me this long to get around to listening to it.
I will say that, you know, to your point, Shane, I think that one of the things that's really interesting about this album is that. Especially with regard to that track, like I do think that there, you know, Stephen Malkmus has never had a problem with like just veering off and doing his own thing, even within the constraints of a song. But they take their time there, and they sort of mellow their way through it, and you know, for lack of a better term. And I don't know, I thought it was an interesting listen.
Have you guys listened to any of his subsequent stuff? The
I've heard a little bit of the Jicks. I saw them at South by 1 year.
I think that stuff is great, too, and you don't have... I mean, it sounds like a more... Well, they've actually done some records that sound a lot different than each other, so I shouldn't just say this in, like, a catch-all way, but to me, a lot of it sounds like a more restrained, reined-in pavement.
I will say that the Rolling Stone review of this record says that the... and this is interesting, because we're talking about this song in particular. The only real problem with Corners... is the band's reliance on its trademark snail paced arrangements. Pavement still delight in sounding like a strong wind could blow them away. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I think it's interesting. Like,
We probably brought this up the last time we talked about Pavement, but our friend Steve from back in the day used to say that it sounded like their picks were too heavy.
Right. We did say that. That's what I forgot about that. You know, what we didn't mention, but we got all the way, and I kept meaning to say this earlier, but the first track that we played up this record, Stereo, popped up in our very first episode, which was Rush 2112.
Oh, yeah.
And we wanted to part about, and I called it the wrong song. I was really nervous.
Oh, right. Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing.
No, I can't go back and listen.
Not that we necessarily do now, but we a little bit more.
Speak for yourself, goddammit. But, yeah, we played Stereo in the very first, and I'd forgotten that, and then I was listening to this record doing the dishes, and I was like, oh, wait, I'm singing the song in my head. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. We put that in the Geddy Lee episode. So a little chestnut there. And by the way, I'm not encouraging anybody to go back and listen to that episode. I'm just...
Oh, yeah. Like, no, I had that friend I've been hanging out with for a little bit. Like, she went, she was like, oh yeah, I went back and listened to like Rush. And I was like, no, don't listen to that one. Like,
yeah, that's a bad, that's a bad idea. I would say not go back and listen to, though we did have some insight. Like, I'm just going down memory lane, just wandering down memory lane right now. There was some,
maybe we can go back and remaster it, you know, or recreate.
If we can,
you know,
go back and make me sound more sober, then I think, and make me stop using the word exactly, I think it might be a better episode.
Exactly.
Speaking of the opposite, well, let's see. Speaking of going back, let's do the opposite of go back and go forward into the intermission.
All right, then.
All right.
What a segue.
I know.
Whoa.
Are we back on? Yeah, I think the triage unit has successfully...
That was my attempt to do with my drink what Pavement does with their guitars on...
Ooh,
well,
nice.
Right, yeah, in the corners.
Well, you know, you were not as tight as Pavement.
I was a little more ramshackle. I just basically knocked my drink over with the mic.
I thought you were like throwing elbows, like, you know, trying to...
Boxing out.
Yeah. Because
it's important to make sure you got your place to sit at the table. Anyway, no,
well,
it's,
we've heard
it's
about
all good.
I've heard that. You're, oh, by the way, are you feeling any more comfortable in your new seat this
I'm
week?
I'm super comfy, man. Shit, I might fall asleep right in the middle of this podcast.
If you do, I will draw on your face.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, just don't spill anything on me and we'll call
trying
you.
Not to. Look, it's been almost a year, and that's the first time I've spilled.
That's the first major spill, yeah.
That's true.
Okay, I'm sure that's incredibly exciting to everybody else.
So let's talk about what we're talking about.
What you got for us this time?
It actually has a Pavement connection to it, but some friends of mine, I know you know at least one of them, were in a pretty great band in the early 2000s called Canoe.
That's true, there is a...
And they put out just I love this. It's video. This video is pretty real low budget, but somebody knows their way around some editing software, and it's highly amusing, and it's a great song. But it's called Come On, and it's available on YouTube, so everybody should go watch it with us.
Yeah, they Canoe was on Scott Canberg's label, Spiral Space.
Amazing Grease,
right?
Yeah. I think they were distributed by Matador, but we'll talk about all that. But it's CMON if you're looking for it on YouTube by Canoe.
Hey, you know what? Let's talk about this here video.
Are we on?
We're talking about this video.
Shane's over here talking about what they do in Mexico.
They say, you know why they sound weird in Mexico?
They Spanish.
You talk a different, whole different tongue. thanks, asshole. That was Come On by Canoe, and yeah, Ryan. You know what? Let me see this. It was a pretty amusing video, and I love how the drummer stuck some drumsticks into his shorts.
This is Joe Salinas, by the way.
Who's a mutual friend of Ryan and I. He's wearing underwear, and he sticks his drumsticks in the side of his, like, as though he's wearing a holster.
Yep.
I think the whole thing is highly amusing. It probably costs about $15 to produce, but I mean,
it's kind of like watching Funhouse Mirror.
Yeah, I mean,
it is. There's a little bit of Picasso going on. Like, they're just
they're playing with perspectives and all that stuff. But that's a really fun song. And like, I saw the band play a lot in the early 2000s. And they got on a bill with Preston School of Industry, which was Scott Canberg's post-Pavement project. And I remember Joe like talking about like, hey, well, he was really trying to get on that bill. It was at Stubbs on the smaller stage, and got on it. And Canberg like really loved him and went ahead and signed him to his Amazing Grease label. Joe also told me that he was really drunk when they did that video.
No.
No, it's true. Yeah. Joe does not drink anymore.
No.
But he was not a teetotaler.
Well,
back then.
He was not and now is. Can I say that song, though, is kind of ramshackle. You're talking about the earlier.
A little. Are we just gonna glom that word all over the rest of this?
I think so, but yeah. As I'm watching it, like, you know, there's no bass and the drums are... It was...
Well, okay, so he plays like a keyboard. The bass parts are done on the keyboard. It's like right. A 1973 Ream or whatever.
Ream, yeah.
But anyway, I think that song and video in particular are particularly worth checking out.
No, I'm glad I saw it. It's something.
Yeah. And Joe, to this day, he is not modest. Like, it did not surprise me when I saw that video that he was playing in his underwear.
He just looked like Freddie Fender. Like,
and then at one point he has, like, three arms.
Yeah, that's about right.
There's some stuff
the funny thing is like you said that somebody knows their way around editing software, which you would clearly have to do in order to put that together. But I mean, like, again, not that much.
Like, yeah, it still looks like it cost about $15 to make.
Yeah, but it did look like there's the possibility that it took a really long time to edit. So
yeah.
Anyway, but it was fun to watch. And
well, those guys,
hey, thanks.
Back in the day, used to like have exploding confetti at their shows.
Yeah,
they were a blast.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah, and they went on a couple of like kind of prominent tours, but apparently just got like shithoused all through them, and maybe did not seize on the opportunity.
Yeah.
When it was around, but
it happens.
Yeah, but fun. Yeah, really fun time watching those guys back in the day, and just now watching the video.
Thanks for bringing that.
Sure.
And let's go listen to some pay. Do you have the new song today too?
Oh, goddamn right I do.
All right, good. I like
I'm bringing it.
All right, so let's do some more payment, and then we'll get to a current affair in a little bit.
So, as the saying goes,
bueno.
Yeah, so I don't know, Ryan, Jane. This was a fun one to revisit. I think we liked
it better than Ryan. We've kind of been
simpatico.
Well, I had listened to it a couple times through, it's grown on me a little bit, but I don't think I'm ever going to just be a big Pavement fan. I respect them. But here's the other thing that kind of came back to me was like, there's not a lot of heart there. There's a lot of snark.
No, that's true. That's a fair assessment to make, I think.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't. Okay, again, like, there is snark there, but there's also, you guys, like, there's surreality. There is, I don't know, heart is. I mean, I can understand why you would say that, but there's an intenseness that doesn't necessarily, like,
well,
and a lot of these songs that doesn't necessarily line up with the things that are easy to say about this band.
I think contextually, and Ryan, correct me if you're wrong, like, you know, you're not necessarily talking about they don't care how it sounds. You're talking about, like, there's not, you know, they sort of don't care.
I'm talking about the content.
There's kind of like an emotional distance from anything that feels 100% real, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Do you think it's
inauthentic?
It's a hard way to put it. Heart's one of those things that you know it when you see it, but and then lack of it, which is not to say, you know, that they're not trying and they don't care about the music, but it sounds like they want to sound like they don't care.
Yeah, but there's a lot of heart in some dude from like a Chicago blues band on stage just giving it his all, and I would a million times rather listen to this.
I actually would too. Than 98% of the blues or 99%.
But you understand what I'm saying? Like, there's a, if
yeah.
You say,
well,
if you mean like authenticity, when you say heart, I mean there's a lot of fucking.
No, I
guys
think there's plenty of authenticity in this.
Banging on in drum circles that I don't want to fucking listen to. You know.
Sure.
Like, when I listen to this, there's so many things about it that I like that remind me of bands that I liked at that time. But also, I could see myself listening to this a lot more. And I'm definitely going to revisit their catalog. But that I felt there's one thing I wanted to say, and you guys are completely going to disagree with me, but
don't put words in my mouth.
I was going to say you might not completely disagree with me, but this like what I so I didn't. It was fine, but I think that the difference in growth, and you are going to disagree with me, between Slanted and Enchanted and this record is almost like the difference in quality between Pablo Honey and the Bends. Like there's so much. This is so much.
I don't see that.
I'm not
at
saying
all.
I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying it's a more mature band.
And I can kind of see where you're going with that. Pablo Honey is a
shitty record.
It's a pretty bad record.
I mean,
I thought for sure that Creep was going to be the last we ever heard of Radiohead.
But Creep was a great song, and there are a couple handful of really good songs on Slanted and Enchanted. But for the most part, they're just pissing into the wind.
I mean, they're two completely different bands, but I kind of get your analogy.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to say that one thing because the more I listened to the record, I just kept hearing like such growth in the song. And granted, there's a few albums in between. You know, I think maybe by the time they got to Crooked Rain, like a lot of this stuff was put in place, like where they were the stronger writing. But
certainly,
do you feel like with Crooked Rain, that they wrote half of it and they're like, well, let's just call it Crooked Rain, and they're like, well, we've got half the album to go, and they're like, okay, one more Crooked Rain.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly the way it
transpired.
Side A's
called Crooked Rain. Side B's called Crooked
also
Rain.
Also Crooked Rain.
Did you work on that all afternoon?
I did, yes. Yes. And this is as good as the material.
I'd love to see like a little snapshot of Kevin like feverishly working on his material like as it gets
crossing
ready to come
it
over
off.
Here.
Like, no.
No, that's not
Crooked Rain. Half the record.
Ask Boog Jores if I'm funny.
So you wanted
still looking
to
for his car.
Right. You wanted to touch on one of the Canberg songs, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, that was Ryan's suggestion. I think that's a pretty good idea.
No touching.
I mean, I like both of them. There's only one that Shane likes, and Shane, this is your record.
Yeah.
So why don't we
Facade
do the one?
Dreams, I definitely don't like. I think I'd rather listen to the IKEA song. But you know, it is kind of interesting to hear the dichotomy between the two voices. So maybe we do listen to Facade. It's not like I'm gonna, you know, stab myself in the eyes. Like it's not. It's just.
Well, of the two,
it's not a horrible song.
I prefer A Date with IKEA, but it's just funny. Like I was driving home, and every time I'd hear a song, I was like, oh, this sounds. I really dig this, and I'd pick it up, and I'm like, okay, like file that on the mental Rolodex, and I get home, and sure enough, the two that I really liked more than all the rest were the Canberg compilations.
So. Well, I definitely don't
compositions
don't like this song anywhere near as much as the rest of the record, but I think it's an interesting. To hear the difference between the two voices, and not to say like his voice is like totally. I mean, it's not like if you had Morrissey and Ronnie James Dio like on the same record, their voices. You know,
no, and I have to listen to it for a minute. I'm like, okay, that's not
Stephen Malkmus. Yeah, there's the disaffected monotonal.
I mean, it still sounds like an indie rock singer. Oh.
Yeah, well, you know, they created that template in a lot of ways. I mean, in the 90s. I mean, like, they took other, I mean, like, all great bands, they took a lot of different influences, but, like, they owned a lot of the 90s, like, this sound did.
They literally purchased most of the 90s.
I think they, I remember reading something at the time that they had purchased.
Pavement had just... purchased with, it's like that.
That's what they did with
that's
their record.
That's why it was a dick.
It was, like I think it was like, a rent with an option to buy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I think that's like that Onion share. Headline where it's like Winona Ryder finally agrees to have to let Generation X have sex with her.
Oh, God. Yeah, probably.
All right, let's why don't we listen to Facade Dreams?
We'll be right back.
It's Passat Dreams. Sorry, I had written it down.
Singular.
Passat Dreams. You're right. You're right. Yeah, not a great song. I stand by what I said before.
One dream about a Volkswagen, apparently.
And that was the dream. Yeah, maybe he had watched that Nick Drake commercial. Oh, no, that was a few years later. Anyway.
I dig it.
It starts out fine, but it just sounds like there's less going on that's interesting to me in that song.
You're allowed.
I know. And you're allowed too, as well. I mean, maybe it's just
because sometimes we're all allowed, Shane. Sometimes.
Hey! Maybe it's just because it stands out from the rest of the record because it's not doing that pavement sound.
I know. that's the
ramshackle.
The ramshackle.
It is a little jangly.
Awesome dance. The jangly doesn't bother me. It's just not a strong song, in my opinion. I mean, it's just not. And yeah.
Well, it is interesting, in my opinion, to hear them, you know, sort of give somebody else the helm for a couple of tracks.
Yeah, let somebody else take the reins.
Yeah, no, I think that's a cool idea on paper. And that first song is better. I mean, it's fine. It's not bad. It's just not.
That's gonna be the pull quote on the record next time they reissue it. Shane Bartel, somebody likes it. It's fine.
Bad.
it's not bad. Yeah, it's fine.
And Volkswagen, that's, you know.
Oh, yeah,
Volkswagen. It's a good buy.
I did think it was interesting that both of his tracks.
They're solid cars.
They have
brands.
They have brands involved. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think that's interesting, especially in
IKEA and Passat. Yeah, like
non-commercial
'90s.
Mm-hmm. So maybe it was irony, but maybe it was
product placement.
Yeah.
They were just getting away with it.
Hey. You know what we didn't talk about? When this band, it was bandied about a lot at the time. It's the first time that I ever saw the descriptor phrase stoner rock.
Which is a different genre than this.
Well, no. Then the mantle was passed to like Queens of the Stone Age, which has nothing to do that. That became
Fu Manchu.
Became stoner rock. I think like every like generation.
With, like heavy guitars from the desert.
Right. Not, by the way, like both of those bands there's some good songs in there too. I just listened to a Queens of the Stone Age record. That would be a little bit of a left turn.
I like hung out with those guys one night, but we'll be getting off track if.
One of these days I'll pick a Queens of the Stone Age record. Like there's some decent pop writing there, which I would never would have thought in a million years because of the dudes that listen to those bands, you know, like the next CD and their six disc shuffler in their trunk because they still live in 1999 is Nickelback, you know, All the Right Reasons or something like those same dudes listen to Queens of Stone Age and Nickelback.
Some of them do.
But Queens of Stone Age is a far.
But Queens
far
of Stone Age also has people with good taste in music who like them.
Because they've written some good songs.
Infinitely better band.
Okay. Well, that was Bright in the Corners and thank you guys for listening to that, and we're gonna do a current affair.
Yeah, let's do a current affair.
We'll be right back with a current affair.
Okay. If you have been listening at all to, it's been in heavy rotation on Saturday Night Radio. It's a track called X's and O's, EXES, and OHHHHS, or something like that, by L. King, which Mark told me during the break that he thought it was like like Spanish, like El King, but it was not that.
Her name is L, like the magazine.
Her name is L, like the magazine. And
I thought it was the same thing as Mark, actually.
Yeah. No, and actually, it might have been oddly appropriate because in the video, she essentially has a teeny tiny trailer out in the middle of the desert, and there just happen to be a bunch of male models walking around.
A bunch of maybe they're gay.
Well sculpted.
Yeah.
One guy is spraying water all over himself with a hose.
Yeah, it's a little. Yeah, it's a. So I,
beefcakey man meat dudes cavorting about in the desert with a chick who's playing guitar in the middle of them.
Yeah,
but it's implied that that they all are there because.
They're all into
because they're enamored of her.
As she says in the song, they all want to come, but they don't want to leave.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know where anybody's going to sleep because it looks like just lots of desert.
There is just one pull-out twin mattress in that baby, I can tell you right now.
I sort of got the impression they wouldn't mind just kind of piling up.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so I asked my wife, I was like, hey, I get to pick a current affair this week. Is there a new song that you're really into? And she was like, yeah, there's this thing that's been playing on satellite radio. You should totally find the video. And I did.
And you watched this with your in-laws?
Yeah, I did.
You didn't know what you were in for.
I was like, oh, So
that sounds like anyway, a scene from like an uncomfortable comedy, like Meet the Fockers or something.
Yeah, I was about to say Robert De Niro comedy.
Yeah. Anyway, it was kind of absurd. But but suffice it to say that, you're welcome.
Well, I will say, like,
it's a good song.
That's a great hook.
Oh, it's a totally great hook.
That the lyrics are nonsensical.
A little sophomoric.
You know what I hear that song in like a Heineken commercial or something. Like,
maybe.
Like the some like thing like that's that. If that song has not been inserted into a commercial yet, it will be.
Give it time.
Yeah. That's a great hook.
Yeah,
and it's kind of a fun, upbeat like thing that's going on. It's very irreverent. There's a lot of allusion, not subtle allusions to sex in it. I mean,
and it's a little girl powery, like I guess, like in that
way.
Yeah,
no,
like,
it is.
Yeah.
I think
well,
it
you know, they're
is.
All ostensibly there for her to worship her.
No, I like that aspect. I mean, like where it definitely flips the script, and a lot of what she's saying, you know, they're all there for me and.
It definitely flips the script from, like, say, a late 80s hair metal video where...
Flips the script from fucking Nickelback when the dude's like, I like it when you're on your knees, you know? Like,
true enough.
Well, and if you think about it, and I hadn't until just now, but if you had flipped the script on this and it was a guy with a guitar walking around in the middle of the desert and just a bunch of hot women around, it wouldn't even be noteworthy. Like, it wouldn't even be interesting.
Interesting. And that's why Ryan, I think, said, you know, in relation to, I'm not going to say flip the script. Oh, damn it, I did it.
Yeah.
To an 80s metal video because it basically was that shit. But now that stuff just seems so offensive and rote.
Just tacky. There'd be a petition online or something.
I'm going to have
Well, there should be.
I'm going to have to argue a little bit that this was tacky.
It was definitely tacky.
Oh, it was tacky. I mean, nobody is denying that, but it's kind of nice to let, you know, it's tacky, and I think there's the part where the guy's spraying himself down with the hose, even when she goes to the other guy and the guy's just in the background still spraying himself down, that's pretty funny. And I don't think it's unintentionally funny.
I think it edged into camp at that point.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it seems like the whole...
At that point.
Yeah, I mean, she drops the guy off in the beginning of the video. She's like, get out of the car, and like leaves him on the side
like
of the
road. Yeah, like a 1989 IROC Camaro.
Yeah. And at that point, was it you that asked if that was Lindsay Lohan?
No, it was me. Because I couldn't see what was going on. She's got kind of a smoke. Oh, that's the other thing, too. Her singing voice is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really cool. She's got this kind of smoky voice that breaks every so often. It's kind of like Adele reminiscent without the power.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, it was cool. That was fun to dig into on many different levels.
Yeah, definitely enjoyable. Thanks, Kevin.
Oh, sure. That'll be $5.
Kevin, you have next week, is that right?
I do have next week.
Beastie Boys?
We talked a little bit about this last week. I'll tease it again. So the very first, the second show that we ever did, we covered Paul's Boutique. And we won't go down the rabbit hole on that. Ryan will have plenty to say about his take on the Beastie Boys. But my personal experience with that, I almost chose the Hot Sauce Committee Volume 2 record because that was the last one that Adam Yauch was a part of.
I've never even heard that record.
And I haven't either. And so maybe we'll just leave it down the road for something else. But I felt like I couldn't miss this opportunity to talk about what I feel like was actually the first record where the Beastie Boys became a band. And that was Check Your Head. And so that's what we'll do next week.
Yeah, cool. That sounds fun to me. And then we'll do a mixtape after that, mixtape episode.
And then can we do Producer Mark Takes Over the Show?
Yeah, I'm planning on it. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I'm ready.
We know.
There's wall-to-wall meatloaf and XTC. And
there will be no meat byproducts whatsoever.
Okay, good.
All right, yeah. Okay, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
Mark.
Somebody likes it.